My son didn't get his man face till he was like 18. What in the hell happened here? Kid just smashed his nose in a football game or, you know, soccer game or whatever. Yeah, I get that. You want to have the right nose.
Yeah.
And it is very powerful to get it right. My surgeon's over the moon. They're so happy because that's their aesthetic.
Yes.
Most important, I say this all the time, make sure that you like their results.
Hello and welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Natasha Graziano. Today we are here with a plastic surgeon. A plastic surgeon like no other. It is my plastic surgeon who just did my boobs and is probably about to do a few more things. Here is all the ins and outs that you're ever going to want to know from a surgeon himself. He is not only one of the top celebrity plastic surgeons, he's one of the best plastic surgeons in the world, based out of Beverly Hills in Newport Beach. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jay Calvert.
Thanks, Natasha. Happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. I have been so excited for this.
Me too.
I've been really looking forward to some things because I have so many questions in my head. I want to look like my filter. Like, do you get that a lot?
It is like the number one sort of reason I think that people are calling for facelifts lately. They're just saying, I kind of just want to look like my filter. Can you do that? And I go, yeah, we kind of can. You know, there's some work to do there. It doesn't happen overnight, but a lot of people are really loving what they see on their Zooms with their filters and their Instagram and TikTok. And, you know, it's not a surprise they'd like to look like that all the time.
Yeah, that's how I feel. So, I mean, I came to you and your impression of me was actually amazing. I think you should do it again. It is so funny. This is my voice note that I left for you. And I was like, look, these are ruptured and I need your help. In fact, let's just have your impersonation.
It kind of went like this. Hi, Dr. Calvert. This is Natasha Graziano, and I need to talk to you about my boobs. And there's a problem. I think I have a rupture. And so if you could please come in and see me, and who do I book in with? We were just like, oh my God, we gotta help this girl. You were so like, I need help in my boobs. And I was like, we'll get you in.
Oh my God, so funny. And here I am dressed as my little F1 groupie today. Oh my God, I love it.
I do want to say though, luckily that's behind us because you were not wrong. Your situation with your breast implants was actually really bad. It was probably one of the worst ruptures I've ever seen. I mean, the implants were truly liquefied and we don't see that. The shell was sort of splintered into a million different pieces and it was really a very severe rupture. We don't see that today because the new implants are cohesive. So even if you strip off the shell, the gel stays together. It's a cohesive gel.
Is that what I have in now?
That's what you have now.
Right.
So you're in good shape now. I think we've gotten the right setup going on.
Yeah,
here.
We do. I mean, okay. So this is the crazy thing. So 3 years ago, I went and did an MRI scan because I felt a lump in my boob. And I was obviously terrified. I was like, oh gosh. And then I realized it was moving. So I was like, well, it's not a hard lump, but it's moving around on both sides. So I wouldn't have this MRI, which, by the way, was terrifying. Like, I would, you know, MRIs are so intense. And then at the end of the MRI scan, they showed me the results and they said, right, well, the good news is it's not cancer, but the bad news is you have ruptured implants and you need to get these done. I was in the UK and it was about to be COVID and I was terrified of what's going on in the world. So I just kind of went inward and decided I'm just going to ignore this and I'm going to wait until a better moment in my life to do it. Wish I'd done it then. I do not regret not doing it then because I met you. So it actually led me down to leading you, which was the best part of it all. However, I was terrified to do them because of what was going on inside of them. And I have no idea how they ruptured. I think it was from having a Thai massage over and over where someone was like stamping on my back and pushing me into a flat surface or some really rough sex. But like, it was just pretty.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Maybe a combination, a little synergy there.
But basically I was getting beat up in many ways. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. So I'm really happy that I came to you. And I remember you were so calm about it. I went into your office. I was terrified. Okay. So for anyone listening who is terrified of having surgery, this is probably for you. And for anyone who is thinking about doing surgery, this is also for you. We're going to dive into so many things today. But I came in and I was absolutely terrified. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, because what happens if? What happened? All these things. But you were so calm. You were so wonderful. You were so amazing. And you've worked with so many amazing people. You've done the boobs and noses and faces of so many stars, so many incredible individuals. And I just knew from your track record, I was like, he's got this. And you were so wonderful. And I healed so fast. And you did it so good.
Yeah, you did really well. And it's unusual to see what had happened with your implants. I'd kind of like to know the manufacturer, and because it was not anything I've seen here.
It was out of Belgium.
Yeah, they seemed like there was an issue with the implant itself. I mean, so that's a big issue, because ruptures like that don't happen. Typically, if they rupture, you can see the shell. You can see some gel here or there. But yours were like liquefied in it, and it just made, you know, I forget who my assistant was that day. I think it was my associate. And we both were just like, this is really just, these are gone. And luckily the operation did go very smoothly. It went great. You're super healthy. That's why you've healed up so quickly. And once we got it all cleaned out and got the new implants in, I did some pocket work to give you a little more cleavage, all that sort of, you know, fun stuff, which is great. That's what you said. Like, give me a little more of this. Yeah. And I said, I got
and
you.
They look it. They, I mean, like when I took this off, I mean, we'll try and insert a bikini shot if we can here. But like, I mean, they look incredible. I showed them to one person, a guy who I was like, just take a look. And I've shown them to multiple of my girlfriends, and everyone has just gone nuts for them. This guy was like, can I touch them? And I hope they're like a work of art. They
road testing, you got to wait 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, my surgeon says you've got another 2 weeks to wait.
That's right. Hands off. I mean, that's the thing. We actually, we talk about that a lot, because people always ask, like, when can I have sex with these things? It's important. Yeah. And that's a great question, because you know, you're doing this operation to look sexier. You want to, you know, they look amazing. And so, but you got to let them heal. Don't go ham right away on these things.
So when it comes to getting surgery, when should somebody actually just take that leap and do it?
Well,
boobs, nose, or anything else?
I think the main thing is after they feel comfortable. I think if it's something you're thinking about, you know, obviously we talk about this a lot on our podcast, and it's a big issue to kind of think about having surgery in the first place. You have to take time off. It costs money, and these operations they aren't cheap to begin with, but after COVID and this inflation situation here, it's really expensive. I mean, these operations have ballooned in price. And so you got to be ready for it, and you have to have the right surgeon. I think you got to do your research and find out who's a board certified plastic surgeon. That's really important. How many of these do they do? Is this what they do? And then most important, I say this all the time, make sure that you like their results. Everybody has a different aesthetic eye. The Google robot canceled my website because they thought my breasts were pornographic. So I think, you know, if you want to have cleavage, like, I'm the guy for that. And I actually had to call Google and say, what happened to my website? And they said, our robot thought it was a porn site because your breasts are really like, you make this cleavage that we don't see on medical photos. Usually the breasts are really far apart, and there's like a whole fist of distance between the breasts. Like, yours are really close together. And I said, well, that's my thing. I like to have that beautiful cleavage, and that's sort of my hallmark of my breasts. My nose have a certain signature too. Everybody looks individualized. Everybody has a custom nose job, but there's a style to it. Mm-hmm. So you have to, like, when you're looking at those photos of the before and afters, say to yourself, do you like how that looks? Do you like that style?
Yes. Okay, that's a really good place to start. So you can look at the work. Well, I'm actually going to put Dr. J's links below so that you can have a look through as we're watching this and listening to this. His work is phenomenal. So you're a real artist on the nose. So I'm actually considering doing my nose. Now, the thing that I love about you is you actually teach the plastic surgeons how to do it. Like, you're in charge of the fellows, you're in charge of this association and that association. I often see you lecturing all over to other top famous plastic surgeons that I know. And I'm like, holy shit, this guy's like, you know, the creme de la creme. But you're also known for your revisions. So that's what was so cool, that if you've got, you know, how many botched up jobs do you get?
I mean, there's a lot of bad nose jobs out there, and they can be bad for a lot of different reasons, but mostly people come in because they don't like the look. And secondarily, they come in because they may like the look, but they can't breathe. And they've kind of hit a wall, like, I like my nose, but I can't breathe through it. And what do I do about that? And revision rhinoplasty is a very specialized area of rhinoplasty surgery. And you don't go to just anybody for revisions. A lot of guys who, you know, a lot of plastic surgeons, guys and gals, I should say, who do rhinoplasty don't do revision rhinoplasty. And they'll send me their revisions and just say, well, you have to go to Jay. You need a rib graft. You need things. I don't do that all the time, which is very smart. It's very gracious of them. And they're doing their patient a favor, because if you don't do revisions all the time, revision rhinoplasty is a terrifying situation that you don't want to find yourself in.
My gosh. What's the difference between a first nose job and then a revision?
So the first nose job, all the structures are normal. You have normal anatomy. The bones haven't been touched. The middle vault where your bridge is, it hasn't been touched. The tip hasn't been touched. Everything's, you know, virgin tissue. So it's easier to operate on. Once you've had surgery, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about when you've broken your nose too. But once you've had surgery, there's scar tissue everywhere. The structures aren't normal. They've been altered. The bones have been broken to bring them closer together. The middle vault's been opened. There have been grafts placed. It becomes a extremely different operation than the primary rhinoplasty. And it's hard for patients to understand that, because they think, well, I'm just getting another nose job. You're not. You're getting a reconstructive operation on your nose that's been operated in a way that you're unhappy. Two totally different animals. And if you can live with your nose the way it is, you shouldn't revise it. I tell this to everybody, and it's on our podcast episode about revision rhinoplasty. I say, if you can live with it, leave it alone.
So interesting. So I definitely feel like I want to do my nose. It will be my third time. I'm so open about this stuff. I think so many people are like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. I'm so open. Like, I am an open book. I'm unapologetic as fuck about who I am. And that is why I'm so happy to bring this particular episode and all the things that we're discussing so open here, because people need to know these answers. They need to know, like, you know, not the fact that I'm about to have a third nose job, but they want to know, like, the whys, the what nots, the hows, what does work, what doesn't work, which surgeons not to go to. So many times I see girls like just winging it, getting a surgeon. It's like, no, invest the money and go to the best. And like, you have people around you who, if they can't have you, you have them trained similar to you. So they'll be getting a very similar result anyway.
Yeah, we run a fellowship out of our surgery center, and it's not just out of our surgery center. It's in conjunction with some of the top guys and girls in Beverly Hills. We have Ash Gavami's part of our fellowship. He and I are sort of, you know, site directors. He has Neil Varanus with him, who we trained. He was one of our fellows in our center at Roxbury. We have Ritu Chopra. We have Nate Villanueva. We have Millicent Ravello, who I do my podcast with. We have Justin Perez, and we have Luis Macias. I mean, these are incredible surgeons all over town. And we train plastic surgeons as a group to really go out and do amazing work when they go out into practice. So they come to us after they've been trained in residencies, which is the time after medical school that you learn a specialty. And then after they finish that, they spend a year with us really refining their craft, learning how to do aesthetic surgery at a level that would probably take them 10 to 15 years to get to, but they get it in a year, and it's a big deal.
Wow, what a blessing. So I know someone out there maybe is a surgeon. Well, now you know where to do your fellowship.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I met some of them and they're phenomenal. You know, it was so interesting. They were so knowledgeable. They were telling me about the operation that they'd watched, you know, watched you do in detail. Like it was so interesting. You could see that they've been like very well trained under you, which was amazing.
Well, and we get the best people. They come from, you know, Neil was from NYU. We have from the University of Michigan, from McGill University. I mean, UT Southwestern, all these incredible plastic surgery programs. Pittsburgh, where I trained, which, you know, on Doximity, they said it's number one. So I don't want to slight the other programs, but, I mean, the University of Pittsburgh's a behemoth. That's why I went there. It's just a gigantic network. It's just huge, but they don't do a lot of aesthetic surgery. So they can train in incredible plastic surgery programs, But then to get the aesthetic surgery, to really learn how to do a great rhinoplasty, they come with us.
So you said you're going to talk about broken noses. So what's the difference with that?
So a broken nose, and I did, thanks for bringing us back to that. The, when you've had a fracture, it's no longer a rhinoplasty. The trauma really throws a wrench in the result. Mm-hmm. And depending on the severity of the trauma, and I talk about this all the time with the patients, I said, look, you've broken your nose. This is not a simple take the hump down, make my nose pretty. We got to reconstruct the valves. We have to reconstruct the bones. Gosh. Like it's a very different operation. And it's not quite a revision rhinoplasty, but it's kind of between the primary, somebody who's never had surgery and never had trauma, and that revision. So it's in a middle ground. It's much, much more difficult.
So do you ever, are they usually in ER where it's at the break it point, or do they plan it? Is there still a moment where they're at, they've got a minute or two to plan, like a day or two at least?
So if you just break your nose,
yeah.
And I get a lot of calls like, my kid just smashed his nose in a football game or, you know, soccer game or whatever. And I say, well, you bring him in, let's set it. And we can do that within 7 days, quite honestly, right. 7 to 14 days, even up to 3 weeks. It's a little harder. But you can do what's called a closed reduction of the fracture, where you reduce the fracture pieces, get them back where they belong, and set it with a cast. If you do that early and you do it right, probably 70% chance, you know, maybe 50, 70, 80% chance, depending on severity, that they're not going to need a formal operation
to fix
it. So that
was not under the knife. You were awake for that.
Well, they should be asleep for that.
Oh, okay.
Depends if you like them. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, you give them a little local anesthesia, some sedation. So they're kind of asleepish. And they don't feel anything. They don't remember it. If it doesn't take care of the problems, if they have airway problems, they can't breathe through their nose, they have a deformity, then 3, 4, 6 months, longer is better. You bring them back and you do a formal rhinoplasty to put them back together. And it's really a different operation than a nose job for somebody who's like, I don't like my big hump, make my nose cute. This is an operation to put their nose back to the best that you can to where it was before the fracture.
What's your favorite surgery to do?
Oh, it's easily rhinoplasty.
Oh, that's, really?
But
you're so good on the boobs.
I mean, I love doing breasts. Well, you didn't ask me what's my favorite structure. That's different, you know.
Oh, structure. Sorry, so, I have a different word.
No, my favorite operation is rhinoplasty because it's very complex. It's the most complicated operation we do.
So, of course, it would be my favorite. That would be my least favorite. I'd be fucking terrified of doing the most complex thing.
I'm a glutton for punishment. That's I love it. But I love doing breasts. I love doing facelifts. I've gotten old. My patients are old with me. Now I'm doing a ton of facelifts. So that's kind of, I've always done a fair number of facelifts. But now I'm doing just a lot more just because my patients have aged into that category with me. Mm. And, you know, once you hit sort of like the time that you're starting to see some stuff happen, that's when people come in. And I'm doing a lot of upper facelifts for, you know, mostly women in their 30s. That's where, you know, they're starting to see some descent of the cheek, they're seeing some boxiness, and they want to get that fox eye look. That's a big deal.
Is that the best time to do it, in my 30s, or should I do it like when I'm already sagging on the face when I'm 50?
It depends on what you're trying to achieve. I just did a patient who's in her 30s. She now looks like she's kind of in her late 20s.
Oh, and I'm coming in.
Yeah,
you sold it right there, babe.
I mean,
I want to look like my filter.
It looks good. I mean, you judge for yourself. It's on all my social media. It's not, you know, I don't hide any of the stuff.
I totally want to see that. And what did you do, the fox eye?
I did a mid facelift and a brow lift. She had had the eyes. It's an interesting story. So she was listening to the podcast and she said, you know, I heard what you said about doing the eyelids without doing the brow lift. I did that. And I was wondering why I looked worse after I did my lids. And I said, the reason you look worse is because you didn't lift the brow. And so your eyelid skin pulled your brow skin down and it made you look more concerned, meaner. It made you look different than you were thinking this would do. You really needed the brow lift with the eyelid surgery. And so she hadn't. So then she came back and now she's done the mid facelift and the brow lift with it. You know, I talked to her just about the brow. She's like, well, what about this? I said, well, we're right there with the endoscope. The incision's this big right here.
Right.
I did the whole thing through that one incision with
the
scope.
Doesn't it take the hair out when you do it?
Nope. You know, you
so
cut between the hairs.
So if I have a facelift up here, it won't diminish my hairline?
No, it will not.
And it comes back, the hair?
It should. I mean, I never say never. I mean, hair falls out for a lot of reasons.
Right.
Sometimes people get general anesthesia and they lose hair. But if you do the incision in a certain way to go with the follicles, with the hair follicles, sew it a certain way, and I don't have a lot of hair loss with those incisions.
Wow.
I will say that I used to because the old wives' tale, which I'm going to dispel right now for all the residents and people that are watching that are doing these, they say to staple the scalp because it doesn't cause hair loss. They say the staples are better for hair loss. Right. I found that to be completely untrue. So now I do a very special, very fine suture, and I don't get a lot of hair loss around those incisions. I never say never because the second that you say, oh, I don't ever have that, something happens.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really check your ego at the door if you're going to be a plastic surgeon. Well, you can have no ego with this stuff.
I love that because you always go in and you told me, you say this wonderful line every time you walk into any operation. What is it that you say?
I say, well, this should be the best operation I've ever done because I'm going in with all of my experience. I have all of my planning, all of my results, everything that I've done up to this minute. The next operation I do should be the best operation I've ever done.
I love that. That's like you're such a humble confidence. Like you're so confident about what you're doing, so good at what you do. And I can see how you have the results that you do. And it's so worth it. Every single thing. Okay, so the rhinoplasty. So like, how do you do it? I mean, like when I have mine done, they cut underneath and then they flip it. Like, how do you do rhinoplasties? Do you flip it? Do you cut the nostrils? Like what's the, and tell me something like that people don't do that you do.
Well, there's a lot that I do that other people watch and go, I would never do that. So there's a lot of that. But a lot of the techniques, I do open rhinoplasties of a lot where you cut the columella, or as one of my patients from Jersey said, the columella. So you cut the columella and you flip it up and you go around the nostrils and you can get access to everything. That's called an open rhinoplasty.
Is that a good way of doing it?
It's a great way of doing it. It gives you total access. If you have to do fancy tip work, it's really helpful. And then there's the closed approach, which I do a ton on revision rhinoplasties because the problem with revisions is you swell and you swell a lot and you swell way more than you did in any primary rhinoplasty. So if it can be done through the inside, that's best.
Could you do mine through the inside?
Possibly. When we looked at it, I thought I could do it mostly from the inside. The tip suturing, if I have to do fancy work on the tip, then I have to open it.
Because I want to make it smaller. Like I want to take the tip off and bring it, make the nostrils smaller, make the whole thing like just a tiny little nose.
And I think it can be done because the actual tip defining points on your nose are not totally out of whack. And so if I can access it from the inside without opening it, it will save you a load of swelling on healing.
You see, there we go. There's another amazing thing that a lot of people don't think about. They don't think about my aftermath. They would just go, we're just only going to do the whole thing open. And
yeah, but I have to ride through that with my patients. And so if I can get them there faster with a better healing, I do it. I tell them it's a possibility. I'm going to have to do it open. And they just have to kind of be okay with that.
Is it on the day that you find out, or how does it work?
No, there are some that I see and I say, I'm doing this open.
Yeah.
And then there are ones like yours where like most of the problems for you are here. Your septum's a problem. Like there's a lot of issues that I can get at through a closed approach that I don't need to open it. And so if I can do all that and I can make the tip look spectacular by doing support grafts from coming in from the side and delivering the cartilages, some techniques that are, you know, they're not, there's nothing, I don't do anything fancy. I think what I do best is I have vision and I plan very well. That's more of the key.
So the planning is a big part of it because you design it first on the paper and your mind.
Yeah. If I were to write a textbook, which I highly doubt I'll ever have time to do. But if I did, I would call it architectural rhinoplasty because I really approach it like an architect.
So clever. He's such a genius.
And it's like, I have to do it that way because you have to have all of your possibilities, all of your if thens, everything has to be worked out before you get there.
Right.
Otherwise you're going to find yourself in trouble for sure. And so for me, and this is why a lot of times when people come to watch me do surgery, they're like, oh yeah, it looks that's easy. But it's because I've planned it so well and I've done 5,000 of these things. So,
5,000? I was about to ask, how many of these have you done?
Yeah, about 5,000 rhinoplasties.
Holy shit, that's a lot of noses.
Yeah, it is. It's a ton.
And half of them were revision or?
More than half have been revisions.
More than half?
Yeah, I got my start into this with revision rhinoplasty. And so now people are coming for the primaries. They figured out, well, if this guy can fix all these botch jobs, maybe we should go to him for the first round.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So now I'm getting the kids from, you know, Harvard, Westlake and Buckley and all that stuff. But it took a while for them to figure it out because you know, I was always known as the revision guy. You know, when people ask me to speak, they want me to talk about, you know, revision rhinoplasty. Wow. They don't say like, oh, tell us how you make those noses so cute. You know, that's not what I'm known for.
Wow.
They're coming now, but you know, it's.
But you do make them look cute. You could make mine look really cute, I feel.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And could we also do the face at the same time? Like, can I just knock it? Because I know something that you are known for and it's pretty amazing. You've written an entire paper on it, in fact. And it's on the nose and boobs at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, I do that a lot.
That means you're under general anesthetic. And the patient gets to have nose and the boobs at the same time, which I think is a great way of doing it.
It is. And I do that a lot. And I do revisions that way because the nice thing is that you can take the rib graft from the pocket where you're putting the breast implant. Because when you open up the breast pocket, all the ribs are right there. You can take a little piece of rib cartilage, close it up, put in the implants, and then move up to the nose and put the nose together.
Wow. That's so wonderful. So, okay, what's the craziest thing that's happened when you've done surgery?
The craziest thing that's happened?
Like, as in you're there and like, oh my God, we're going to have to like, her whole nose has just fallen in or like something really, like something's happened weird that you've had to like just go, okay, into your really medical brain and think like, I've got to think of this or like the implant didn't want to go in or like, what's the like weirdest or funniest thing in that way? Probably not funny. I don't think any of this is funny.
Yeah, none of it's funny. I mean, the things that happen is you find it's kind of like with, and this is not a joke, but like your breast implants being that ruptured like, I mean, I've seen a lot of ruptured breast implants.
And you've never seen that.
This was extreme. I mean, I'll give you guys the video if you want to, you know, it's up to you what you want to do with it. Oh, it's your body.
Oh my God.
But it was like, what in the hell happened here?
Wow. Well, as I said, I was literally on my front getting absolutely pushed in by the Thai massage therapist, or it was rough sex, and I just don't know which one it was, which has made me really conscious now of like not laying on my front. Like, I know I'm only just 2 weeks out of surgery. I mean, look, I'm 2 weeks out of surgery and I'm already back filming. And I have been, by the way, since day four.
No, I know. I saw that.
I mean, I was literally like back up and running, but that's because of the way that you take care of it so well. I didn't even need narcotics. I took the ibuprofen. I was on the lowest form. It was like unbelievable. I think I took Valium twice, medicated by you, prescribed by you in the right way.
Right, for the muscle spasms.
For the muscle spasms.
It's very important.
And then you were like, by the way, you're fine to come off it after like 3 days, 4 days. I was like, this is awesome. And I had very, very, very little pain after.
Yeah, that's lucky. I mean, everybody's different. I think that's there are certain people that go through surgery and they just get through it. I mean, I had like a big sinus lift for a dental implant. You know, they drill through, you know, my maxilla and put bone graft in there and, you know, then drill into your bone. And I took one Percocet like on the way home and then I was on ibuprofen. So like either pain is something that you deal with or I have some patients that need a lot of pain control. They really have a lot more pain and it's not predictable.
Wow.
So I just kind of, I tell everybody, you know, especially with what you had done, I had to deal a lot of suturing on the sides and that can hurt a lot.
Is it normal? Because even like, well, I'll talk to you after about like some of the things, but like, it's so funny because I felt it. I didn't know you'd done the suturing there. And then afterwards I was like, oh, I can feel like a little bit, you know, and I knew that's when I asked you, I said, well, oh my gosh, there's no stitching on the outside. And then you told me you'd done it on the inside. So it's amazing because I've got absolutely no scarring. It's like the most minimal scar ever underneath the boob.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, that was the plan because you said like, how about some more cleavage? I was like, I'm on it.
That's how we do it.
That's what I do. So, you know, that can hurt. And that's where I was like, well, you may need some Percocet for this or that. Mm-hmm. You might need, you know, but if you can get, and I tell every patient, get off the narcotics as soon as you can. If you need them, take them. I'm not like this person's like, oh, you shouldn't take narcotics. Like if you have surgery, like I worked in Dubai for a lot of years, just, you know, going there and doing very complex Arabic noses, which was awesome. But since COVID, I haven't been back. You can't get pain medicine outside of the hospital. You want narcotics, you're in the hospital with an anesthesiologist giving it to you. It's just not common. So when you go home, you have to go home on tramadol or ibuprofen. Yeah. And so it can be done. This is the thing. Like there's a lot of like this, the narcotic culture of this country was clearly a whole other topic we could do a series on, but so get off the narcotics if you can. If you can get onto ibuprofen, it works great. And it is a really good pain control medication. And Most people can do that after a day or two.
Yeah, it's amazing. Can you imagine a life where you effortlessly magnetize your dreams to you? Financial success, the love of your life, the family of your dreams, and everything you've ever dreamed of at your fingertips. With my approach to manifesting, I have a practical method where you use the power of your creative words. It's called scripting. We write in the past tense in a certain way to attract all our desires to us. I've done this. I met my husband in 3 weeks doing this. I helped myself heal twice. I helped myself get rid of a rash on my body. I have helped myself to elevate myself and get myself out there to so many people. I've changed my bank account number. I've added 2 zeros onto it. I have created abundance like I could never dream of. The most beautiful homes around the world. And you can do this too, like so many of my clients are currently doing right now. The success stories speak for themselves. I want to show you how to do it. This is for somebody who is ready though. Don't even bother coming unless you are ready to transform your life. If you feel like, oh, I'm on the fence, I don't know, none of this shit really works, then baby, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for you. This works for somebody who says, I'm ready. I'm ready to try something else. Try using the power of my words. I wanna learn in a curriculum. I wanna be in a group with other like-minded individuals and I wanna win. This is for entrepreneurs who are ready to go to the next level or maybe get out of corporate America and go to the entrepreneurship world. If you're ready, come and join us inside the Scripting Society and I'll see you there. What's the pain level like after a rhino? Like I can't really remember it so well. What's the average pain like after a rhinoplasty?
Well, I think for a regular rhinoplasty, it's sort of like that dental work that we were talking about, like getting your wisdom teeth out, getting, you know, some kind of, you know, root canal or something like that. It's painful enough that you might need some pain medicine a day or two, but then you should be able to get over to non-steroidals. And then at, you know, which is an ibuprofen or a naproxen or something like that. But with the ribs hurt. They tend to hurt for a week or two, and patients, they're not down for the count with it, but they say, you know, this is a little rough. Yeah, from taking the rib cartilage, which, right. You know, which I use a lot for revision rhinoplasty.
Can you still take the ribs, even though I've had my boobs, but it's still fine to be able to go under the ribs and take a graft from it?
You can. There's ways to get it, not through that incision, but nearby. You know, you want to get a little more towards the sternum because you want the cartilage. You know, a rib is basically bone, and then there's a springy piece of cartilage coming up to your sternum, your breastbone,
yeah,
that allows our respiratory mechanism to work. That cartilage is important to it. I steal a piece of that cartilage, and that's what I use for the nose, and the cartilage will grow back eventually. Wow. So it's kind of a unique approach.
That is a unique approach. So how did you think about doing that?
I mean, people have used rib cartilage and since World War I. There was, my sort of surgical hero was Sir Harold Gillies, who was a British surgeon who took care of a lot of the, you know, grenade injuries and trench injuries of facial injuries of soldiers. And he was the guy that kind of said, you know, we're going to need some stuff to build these noses. And he would get what's called osseocartilaginous, bone with cartilage, and build up the bridges of the noses. And he'd use forehead flaps where you'd turn skin from the forehead down onto the nose, which we still do today, just like Gillies did it. It's still one of the best ways to reconstruct the nose. I do, you know, probably 4 or 5 a year. I'm trying to do more. I like doing this.
You do.
I love them. They're great.
Why do you love it?
Because it's they're big reconstructive cases.
Aren't I going to lose the skin on my forehead if you peel it down?
You will. If you needed that, it would be because your nose was off because of cancer, because right. of trauma, because of some disease process, which I've had a few patients from Wegener's granulomatosis. There's these problems that come up that really get rid of your nose. Cocaine nose. Cocaine's back in a big way. I have about 5 cocaine patients that I'm working on now. And their noses are demolished from, it's a very bad drug.
See, I'm lucky that didn't happen to me. I did a lot of cocaine back in my day. I haven't done it for 7 years, but I was worried that my nostrils were gonna fall in. And I mean, if you go inside, you're probably gonna see like-
Oh yeah.
You're going to see.
There's some damage.
So what's it look like for someone who's done that?
So maybe you will need that forehead flap.
Holy
no, just kidding.
Shit. Oh my God, no. Oh,
I've looked in there already. You're good.
Oh, really? You've already? Yeah, yeah. Oh, good.
No, I've already assessed that.
You said it after you came out. You were like, I was so tempted to just have done your nose while I was there. And to be honest, I wish I'd signed a form saying like, if you want to do the nose while you're in there. I considered it. Doing
I typically
both.
Don't ambush people with a rhinoplasty. That's not a good idea.
No, but we discussed
Hey, come here
it.
For a second.
We totally discuss it. Okay, big question which people ask. I know someone's thinking now. And I get this whenever I have questions about my boobs. Where's your scar? Did he go in through your nipple, your armpit, your this, underneath, on top? You went through underneath on mine. And why and where do you typically leave the scars?
So the best place is to go in the inframammary fold, which is under the breast where yours is. That's the best spot because it's well hidden. Which I'll have a comment about that too, because now the bathing suits and all these styles, the inframammary fold is in play in style. Like there are people going on to the red carpet and
I like it.
So it's great, except that now my incisions have to be really good if I'm going to put them there.
Oh.
Periareolar around the nipple is very common. Not my favorite.
I'm not a fan of that personally.
I'm not either, but I do it a lot. And
by request?
Well, people come with the previous operation that way. And
so you have to follow it or can you do something different?
You can do something different. The armpit is good.
Why would anyone want to go in through the nipple and then like change their...
They feel it's hidden, but it's not. When you're standing, if you see somebody with the periareolar incision, you can see it when you're standing in front of them. So it's not that hidden.
Mine is so hidden. Like you absolutely cannot tell that I've had a boob job. You would never know. My boobs look so natural because it's like, I think, is it half under, half over the muscle?
Yours, yeah. The pectoralis major muscle covers the top of the implant and then below it's just covered by the gland, which is fine. And you have some breast tissue, so your breasts work really well with breast implants.
Wow.
And so there's some, so, and that's the other thing. When people come in for breast jobs, they're always like, you know, oh, I want to look like this. And I was like, well, you're not really built that way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to look like that. Mm-hmm. I can do this or that. And you have to kind of educate patients as to what's possible for them. Because everybody's got different breasts and the chest wall asymmetries and the breast asymmetries. You know, you can make breasts, you know, they're sisters, not twins. That's kind of like the famous thing we
Mine
say.
Mine are pretty good though.
These are pretty, yours are really,
you were
really...
like, we got this. It was very good. The symmetry was like on point. They are pretty much our twins. If anyone has twins, it's me.
Which is great. You know,
yeah.
That's just because you're built the way you're built.
Right.
Everybody comes with different anatomy. My job as the surgeon is to assess their anatomy, tell them what's possible, show them what I think I can do for them, how it's going to look. And then I always say, bring pictures of what you like and let me say yes or no, or yes, it's going to look like that. That's a big...
Can you change the nipples? Do people come in with like nipples and be like, I want to make them smaller, I want to make them bigger? Like, do you get any of that stuff?
A ton. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Areola reduction is common. Nipple deprojection. Some women don't like the size of the nipples. They want them smaller. So we can do all that stuff.
Gosh, that's nuts. You can do it. That's amazing. Okay. Question as well. People always ask, can you breastfeed? I breastfed fine.
I cannot breastfeed.
No.
They do ask me that all the time. And I've never been able to do that. I tried for years. My kids were just like, Dad, it's enough. No, no, you should be able
it
to breastfeed.
It would be easier if men did it.
It would. share the responsibility. Typically breastfeeding is not affected by breast implants.
Right.
Now, reductions can affect it. It's hard to say. And I tell people this, like I had, and then sensation is always the other question. You're like, will your nipple areola or sensation be altered by any kind of breast augmentation? Typically not. In general, people have some sensitivity after having breast augmentation, but then that typically will go away. If you do any kind of lift, a mastopexy, then you can lose some sensation. Again, I don't have a lot of problems with that because I think the technique that I use, which is a superior medial pedicle technique, where you leave the, it's basically if you can imagine like a piece of tissue that the nipple's on and you kind of rotate it up into position and fold the skin around it. That typically doesn't cause a lot of problems with sensation. So, but some people do lose sensation with reductions. It can be... And if I say, if that's an issue for you, which there are some women, like if I don't have my nipple sensation, I'm out of business in terms of my sexual enjoyment. I say, then you do not have breast surgery.
Wow.
Because you, if you can't have, if you need that the way it is, then you can't risk it because it is a risk.
Yeah. Well, I definitely can still feel my nipples. Like I'm very sensitive. I don't feel any different at all. And also just to, I didn't have boobs. Like, thank God I had a boob job, even with all the risks and all the whatever you want to call it. I wanted boobs. I was an A, almost flat chested. And it was, I went from an A to a D, which was a massive jump. Totally not usually done. And I wish I'd come to you first because I probably would have done two, but had gone up in stages or just gone to a great size and not had the need to go like, you know. But now they are fixed and look so much better because they're not off in the armpits facing out sideways like two bog-eyed fish, you know. So like it's so
yeah,
much
that's not better. A good look.
Not a good look. People always ask about lifts. Can you do a boob enhancement lift with the boob job and things like that? Is that a common practice?
Yeah, it's very common. We do that together. Lifting the areola. Yeah. Yeah, we do that all
or
the time.
Or lifting the boobs if yeah. They're facing downwards after like having loads of kids.
Absolutely. It's usually part of like a mommy makeover where we're doing a tummy tuck and some liposuction and then doing breast implants and a lift. It's
wow, the mommy makeover.
That's a big day.
So that's like really. So oh, yeah. You do boobs, lipo, tummy tuck. Basically, don't worry about going to the gym for the next 2 years. I'll fix your body and you'll walk out looking perfect.
It's kind of the way that it goes.
I love that. Like, I'm all about that.
After the kids and everything, that's why it's like the mommy makeover. But
I love that. See, I really rate it. Now, the word facelift, let's just go there again for a second. I know we've spoken a little bit about it. Facelift has a really bad connotation to it. When I told my mom I'm getting a facelift, she was like, no, don't do it. I was like, mom, it's not what you think.
No.
When she met you, she felt a lot better and was like, okay, whatever you're talking about, obviously this guy knows what he's doing. And that's my mom. And you know, that was wonderful to know. My mom gave you her approval after she met you. She was just like, wow, he's phenomenal at what he does. And then she saw my boobs and was like, wow, very good job. But here's the thing. With the facelift, people are terrified because they think it's going to make them look like that really like Hollywood Barbie older woman. Like, and their face is like just inflamed.
That's not a good look.
No. And you don't.
Don't do that again.
I've never. No. But I'm trying to like, you don't do that on your patients.
No.
So when you get a patient who comes in, who is massive lips, looks horrendous, what do you do? How do you handle it when they're coming in like that?
Well, if they're already, you know, kind of trashed that way, yeah, then I can't do anything for them at that point.
Is it like a D-lift at that point? Like a decrease?
Yeah. I mean, I've had some patients where I've tried to kind of undo the bad facelift,
yeah,
which does happen. And it can be done. It's hard because you're always going to be fighting the scar tissue and the remnants of the last facelift. But you know, it's just, and by the way, if you ask them, like, well, what did your surgeon think of this deal? They'll say, my surgeon's over the moon. They're so happy because that's their aesthetic.
Yes.
They do think they look great. And they sit there and say, I can't understand why you want to fix this. There's nothing to fix. You look amazing. And the patient's like, I don't. This isn't what I wanted. Yeah, I don't look amazing.
By the way, after my nose the second time,
yeah,
I went in and I was like, I really wanted it smaller. He was like, we can't make it any smaller than it is. And I was like, okay, but I was like, please try. And then I did the operation because he was a good surgeon in London. He wasn't the best. He was a good one. He just wasn't the best. And you get what you pay for. You said this and you're totally right. I came out and I just remember thinking, oh no, I'm going to have to do this again at some point. And that was my first thought. Mm. And now here I am. And I'm like, so let's go back onto face, because face is such a topic on itself.
But it is. There's an episode of our podcast where I talk about the natural lift, which is sort of what I do.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to put a link to Jay's amazing podcast below. It's so insightful, so educational. You learn about every single surgery type. You and your associate, Dr. Ravello, you both talk together about this, all the procedures you could do in detail. You want to know about the specific thing you want, it's on there. Go and take a look. So just promo for your amazing
thank you
podcast.
I appreciate the plug.
Yeah, of course.
But the Natural Lift podcast is an episode where You know, of course, Dr. Ravello is making fun of me, which is most of the podcast anyway, where she's saying, you know, oh, so now you're naming your facelift. I said, I have to name it. Love because that. People want a named lift. I don't know why. I don't know what that's about. But if you don't have a name for your lift, it seems like that's not what you do.
That's so interesting. I like the name thing as well. The reason I'm so intrigued to do it is because you said the natural facelift.
Right. And the other name that I would call my facelift is like the no filter facelift.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah. That's
the and I think
one.
That's. Oh, I love it. So the concept with my facelift is that it's not like I'm doing anything totally. None of us do anything different. All, you know, this one's got this lift. This one's got that. I told one he should name his the mantis lift, but because he makes his patients look like praying mantises. But the
my son's favorite insect.
Oh, it's my favorite insect too.
Really, yeah, he finds them in the garden.
I love them.
He's obsessed with them.
They're the coolest things.
Aren't they amazing? We have so many at home. We put them in our little box and feed them and set them free.
There you go. Well, it's not good to look like one though. I'll tell you that much.
No, it's really not.
Especially if you're a dude, because evidently when they're finished mating, the female eats the guy. So it's
oh my god. Yeah,
it's a little fact about your praying mantises.
Really?
Yeah. It's a lethal injury to as a male. It's part of the deal. It's like a ritual. Check it out.
God, it's a can't imagine that. By the way, after we go on our date tonight, I'm gonna fucking eat you.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Can you imagine? My dates would be like, no, Natasha. Or
I know. And these poor mantises, they go right in anyway. They're like, I know what I'm getting for this, but I have to do it anyway.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, the back to the natural facelift. Now everyone's like Googling it. They're like, no way.
Literally.
So what happens with my facelift is I try to hide all the incisions. Right. I try to make everything. And I talk about this. I have videos all over like YouTube and everything that where I say, look at this incision. Let me show you why this is different. And I kind of walk everybody through where I place the incisions, why I don't cut down the back of the neck, why I don't cut on the face. All these things that you see on these other facelifts, which are the telltale stigmata signs of a facelift. And you don't want that. You want it to, you know, I do everything from the brow to the mid cheek or the mid facelift through an incision that's this big in the hairline, an inch behind the hairline, and I do it all with a scope. And you can't, like, you don't see anything.
So the entire
I do the whole part.
This part,
from
this
here to here. Down here, the incisions are hidden in the crease of the ear, behind the tragus, this little piece of cartilage.
How do you get behind that?
Just cut back there and peel the skin over it. And then when you do the lift and put it back in the right place, sew it nicely. You know, and Bob's your uncle, to use a British term for you there.
Yeah, Bob's your uncle.
And Bob's your uncle.
So then, that's the natural facelift.
Yes, exactly. Where you're hiding everything, you're not pulling. The vectors are, so in the neck, the vector is back and up. It's this way. On the side of the face, it's not truly vertical. It's a sort of a 75, 80 degree vertical this way. And then in the mid face and the brow, it's a vertical vector. And so if you, in concert, when you do all of them together, the patient should look really great. They're not going to look younger. They're going to look better. They're going to look healthier. They're going to look more vital. Do they look younger? Yeah, I think so. But that's not the goal. The goal isn't some like fountain of youth. It's kind of ridiculous to think like, I'm 65 years old, I want to look 20. That's not going to happen.
No.
You're 65 years old. You look like you've been in the sun too much. You're sagging. Things don't look good. Now you want to get things lifted and look tighter and healthier. And maybe, people will think it took 10 years off you. It's not the point. The point is you look awesome. You don't look like you've had a facelift. You look fabulous. You look incredible. You look refreshed. You look like you went to, you know, Tahiti for 2 weeks. That's the goal. And this is happening younger and younger. A lot. My average patient facelift age right now is 46.
Wow, it is getting younger.
It used to be 55.
Yeah.
It's 46 now. As soon as they see a jowl, as soon as they see that boxy face coming in, they come running because they want it done. They do the full thing. In the 30s, they come in when they see that cheek descent and they're trying to fill. I like what the Botox does. I wish my brow was up like that all the time. Can I look like my filter? 35, 36, 37, 38. Then we're doing a mid facelift and a brow lift and usually a little canthoplasty for the fox eye look. And that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm doing a ton of those. I'm doing like this. I think I've done 6 or 7 in the last month.
So, oh my God. Okay. So many questions from this. So is it literally like grabbing skin? Like, have you ever a roast chicken? You know, like the raw whole chicken. I'm sorry. It's the only way I can describe it. I love eating it. But let's just pretend that there's a skin on that chicken, which there is. Is it kind of like when I move that skin, I can then get my lemon and I can put my lemon under the skin between the tissue mm-hmm. and the skin and then put my herbs inside it
right.
for flavor. So without the flavor part.
Sounds delicious.
Is it? Yeah, I love cooking it. I should actually have you guys over for dinner one day. So is it similar to that in the way that you move the skin and tighten it? Is it kind of like that? Or is it actually you're making lots of incisions on the face and moving it around?
It's actually that you're working on the tissue. You're what? Not, you're lifting. So my lift is done for the lower face and neck. You're elevating the, what's called the smas, which is a fancy name for the fascia of the face. Fascia is like your muscles are all in fascia. There's the, you know, your iliotibial band is a band of fascia. There's the little tendinous inscriptions in a washboard stomach is where the fascia coalesces around the muscles and you get those nice lines. I haven't seen those in years on me, but the reality is that that fascia of the face is very liftable. So you pick up the skin, you know, you make the incisions in a very fancy way. And once the skin is elevated, you lift the fascia and that's what gets rid of the jowl. That's what cleans the jawline. You take the platysma muscle, you know, your bands here, and you take that muscle and you bring it laterally up to the fascia of the neck. And when you do that and you stitch the fascia to itself, then you've elevated all the structures that were making you look boxy, older, jowly, whatever. And then you don't pull the skin, you lay the skin down because with that fascia, the skin has come with it. And this is where people call, you know, the deep plane facelift, the smas facelift. They have a different name for, you know, all these different ways of lifting that thick fascia. Whatever you do, it's fine. Just lay the skin down and trim it and sew it in place. It's not pulled. It's not tight. That's why the scars heal well. If you see wide scars, it's because somebody did a skin lift and they pulled the bejesus out of the skin, and that's not the way to do a facelift.
Which is when you get that crazy look.
Then you look like you've that wind swept, you know, like God. Looks like they came out of a wind tunnel. So, terrible.
For example, with mine, we could get rid of these things here and I smile, those fat things like there.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You can see that thing. And then, and by the way, just like a disclaimer to anyone watching, I absolutely am so grateful for the way that I have been born. It's just that when I'm on TV this much, I can see all these things and surgery is personal. So everybody will tell you around you, oh, your nose is fine. Oh, your face is fine. They then go home that night, go to sleep, don't think about it and get on with their beautiful life. Meanwhile, I cry myself to sleep thinking about how I was bullied for 15 years. No. 20 years for my nose and how big it was and how awful it was. And I'm still thinking about it and have PTSD about it. So never worry about your friends and people's opinions. If you want to do the surgery, fucking do the surgery. Because it is absolute bullshit that they get to go and sleep on their beautiful face whilst you are crying yourself to sleep or distressed or thinking constantly why you should have surgery. Right. And that you shouldn't do it because Hannah and Martin said you shouldn't. Not fair. You know, I absolutely am for surgery the whole way.
Well, I couldn't have said that any better than that. I'll add something to that for you. If you need a line for them, say, I must have Alzheimer's disease because I don't remember asking you for your opinion.
Wow. Shit, that's yeah. a really good
That's a good
line.
One. That's, you know, who cares what they think? It's yeah. your body. You do what you want to do. You know, people don't understand. First of all, most people don't understand the power of plastic surgery. They don't realize when I take a patient who has, and I'm not going to use the word deformity, but they have something that they're self-conscious about. It could be anything. It could be their big nose. It yeah. could be their boxy face. It could be their flat chest. I don't care what it is. Their hanging belly. You take them and you change that for them in a way that they feel confident, their world changes. I see this with teenagers all the time. These kids come in with these, you know, noses that they're, you know, it's their nose.
I have the same. I was bullied for it at school. People right. used to go, mm-mm, when I walked past them, they'd make trumpet sounds. I felt like I was called Dumbo. I was called Big Nose. I was bullied so badly through school for my nose. And it affected my mental health so badly. And it was the best decision I ever made getting the first nose job, but it still wasn't small enough. And then the second one to make it small. And now the third one is nothing to do with an outside opinion. I don't think I've been told about my nose having an issue since the first round. But now it's a personal thing. I just want to be able to breathe better. I want to have the nose that I want from both sides. This side, I look like Natasha Graziano. And this side, I look like fucking Shaniqua. Like, I don't want to have two different versions.
Yeah, I get that. You want to have the right nose.
Yeah.
And it is very powerful to get it right. And I can tell you, I see these kids. I mean, they'll come in and it's so predictable that the parents will bring, you know, their child in and they're a teenager and they'll sit slumped. And the shoulders are slumped and everything's down to hide their nose. And they don't do it. It's not done on purpose. It's how they've come to minimize how they feel about their nose and their self. And they just are not confident. And I do the rhinoplasty and they're happy right away. And the family's happy and everybody's celebrating. When I celebrate is the year follow-up when they come back and they say, guess what, Dr. Calvert? I joined the cheerleading team and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And you know what? I got into Dartmouth and I'm going doing this and I'm my boyfriend. And you're just like, it's a different kid.
That is.
I mean, just all they have to do is, I think it was in one of the Marvel movies where they showed like the time trajectories and things would split off. I mean, their trajectory of where their life was going and what they were going to do compared to what happens after they have that confidence restored, or they get it for the first time, really, it's night and day, and it's so powerful, and it's beyond rewarding. I mean, there's nothing I can even say about it. It's just it's beautiful, and it's why I really go to the mat for my patients because they deserve it.
I love that. What a beautiful note to wrap today's session on. That was so wonderful. And if you have a child who is, you know, wanting to look at surgery, they're a teenager and they're in that, there's never young enough. I mean, what's the age of what the youngest sort of nose or whatever?
15, 14 yeah. For females.
Are they still growing their noses at that point?
Not much. Once females start menstruating, they can get a rhinoplasty. For boys, and I have a lot of teen guys that come in, I like them to have their man face. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know how like my son didn't get his man face till he was like 18.
Yeah.
Like he still had a very boyish face, even though his face was big. He's 6'1" or whatever he is now, but he didn't have a man face. He just got it, you know, last year. Mm. So I like them to have their man face. So 16, 17 might be okay.
Yeah.
But they might have to wait till 18.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So God, I wish I'd known that. I would have had mine done at 17, 18.
Yeah, you
16.
Sure.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I know that, you know, very reserved in the UK, so surgery can be later, but you see clients fly out. I'm British and I've just moved here, but I would have flown out here for it. People fly from all over to come see you at your amazing Beverly Hills clinic and the view is divine and it all happens in your amazing surgery. I was like, this is so cool. It's just like right here. To you, it's like so casual. Whereas I've always thought surgery was like, and now we go like to a whole different ward and a whole different building and like it's a rah, big thing. I was terrified. It's nothing like that. It's for you. It's like, it's you're so casual about it because you've done 5,000 noses. So
we're comfortable. Yes. There's never a casual day in my OR. It is interesting, but like I said, when people come and visit, they go, "Oh man, I got it. It's so simple. I'm gonna do it just like that." And it's really just
confidence and calm.
And we have a system, and we all know what we need to do. My tech said it to me even the other day. He said, "You know, Doc," he's like, "we're all very friendly and we're all very, you know, close here and we work together all the time." He goes, "But I want you to know there's never a day that I am not here with a sense of urgency to be the best I can be." I said, "Wow. I know that." And we all know that because that's the culture. And it is, it's the culture of the practice.
Yeah.
You can feel it on the first phone call. Yeah. You can feel it when you come in. And if it doesn't feel right, maybe you're not in the right place.
Interesting. Well, if you've enjoyed today, I hope that you share this with somebody who you think needs not the surgery. I mean, that might be an insult if you send somebody
don't
a fucking video. By the way, this is for you. If I got that when I was 15, I would have been like even more disastrous. Oh my God. Share this with somebody who's considering surgery. And we all know somebody who is. I think this will help a lot of people going to an amazing surgeon, knowing who to go to. Dr. J, if he isn't the perfect person for you, as you can hear, he'll tell you who is. And he told me he was the perfect person for my teeth. He literally directed me for every single thing. And I'm so excited to have had you here today and to be coming in to hopefully be doing the rest of my features and my nose and my face. You are phenomenal at what you do. I'm so grateful for my boobs. If anyone has any questions about my boobs or anything else further, just DM me. And then if you are going to ask, how can I book it? We're just going to put Dr. J's website below, which is
drcalvert.com, drcalvert.com. It's easy.
Love that. Couldn't be more easy. There we go. Yeah. So the link is below drjcalvert.com.
Just Dr. Calvert. We just left the Dr. J Calvert. Out. Just, we went, you know, there's only one Dr. Calvert.
My producer's looking at me like, why? Which he always fucks the links up. So drcalvert.com. The link is below. If you want to make your consultation, that is how you do it. With the link below. Please don't DM me asking me how to do a consultation. If you are one of my VIP celebrity friends, please do send me a text or a WhatsApp or a DM later today, and I will personally introduce you to the clinic or Dr. J himself, because you're one of my special people. If you're one of my one-to-one students or in my scripting society, I would absolutely be pleasure to personally introduce you as well. Apart from that, the link is below for everybody else, and it's so important that you go to the right surgeon, and I am so grateful that you've spent the time with my beautiful audience today.
It was amazing. I really appreciate you having me on. I think it's great that you did this, because your willingness to share your story really will help others to kind of get the information that they want and do it right.
I agree. Thank you so much for coming. We'll join you again next week.